Ready to go? Call the Senate Transportation meeting to order at Thursday, the 3rd of April. We have a quorum. Senator Aterio, Senator Wagner, and Senator Lincoln, and myself as chair. We hold a hearing on one bill today. The commissioner's on and that's committee substitute for Senate Bill 112. And the commissioner's got a tight schedule, so I asked him to testify first. And then, if there's questions, he's got to be two places at once. We also have present Senator Olson.
Do you have to move to adopt the CS?
And so I need to adopt the CS, the first thing. Right here.
I don't have one.
Yeah.
Did I get one?
Did he get one?
Should have, yeah.
No.
Oh, it's over there. He's sitting in.
My friend, the senator. I move to adopt CS for substitute Bill 112.
The backslash Q version.
Yeah, backslash Q.
So moved. And so the first thing in the courtesy to the table, if he identify himself and give testimony.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cowdery and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. For the record, my name is Bill Corbus. I'm the Commissioner of Revenue. Appearing with me by teleconference in Anchorage is Robin Wilson, Revenue Auditor in the Department of Tax Division. Are you there, Robin?
I'm here.
Is Rob?
Yes, she is there.
Yeah.
Governor, and I very much appreciate this committee's consideration of Senate Bill 112. The work this committee has done on this important legislation. Given the low tax rate on highway motor fuel in Alaska in comparison with other states, I urge you to agree that this legislation is a viable method of generating critically needed revenues in the short term until Alaskans are able to realize long-term revenues from resource development. Why is this legislation necessary? SB 112 is a very necessary element of the governor's overall budget and investment plan for fiscal year 2004. Governor Murkowski's primary mission is to build a robust, growing economy and generate sufficient state revenues to fund programs and services that Alaskans need and expect. Passage of SB 112 will help ensure increased state revenues and may prevent the elimination or diminution of important programs and services. What this legislation will accomplish. SB 112 will generate approximately $37.7 million in fiscal year 04. For the full fiscal year, this legislation will generate $41.16 million. This translates to over $3 million to the state per month. It is time to increase the highway motor fuel tax rate. The current highway motor fuel tax rate in Alaska, set 33 years ago in 1970, is 8 cents per gallon. Even at 20 cents per gallon, with the passage of this legislation, Alaska will still be in the middle nationwide in excise tax rates on highway motor fuel. 22 other states have excise tax rates on highway motor fuel above 20 cents per gallon. And many of those states add other taxes to highway motor fuel. In fact, 35 states have combined state and local motor fuel taxes higher than 20 cents per gallon, ranging from 21 cents per gallon to 38.7 cents per gallon. To provide a perspective, according to the Federation of Tax Administrators of February 2002, the state of Washington highway motor fuel tax is approximately 23 cents per gallon, and the national average of state and local gasoline tax is 22.9 cents per gallon. This legislation will bring Alaska's highway motor fuel tax closer to the national average, but still stay below that, the national average of nearly 23 cents per gallon. This will be the first increase in Alaska's highway motor fuel tax in 33 years. This is an essential component of the governor's spending and investment plan for Alaska. He recently submitted to you for your consideration. The Department of Revenue can and will efficiently administer the increased motor fuel tax as discussed in the department's fiscal note. I urge and appreciate your serious consideration of this legislation and ask that you pass it out of this committee today with your support for its enactment this session. Robin Wilson, who I have already introduced, can provide more technical information and answer specific questions pertaining to the administration of the motor fuel taxation in general and of this important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions? Mr. Corbett's on a time constraint, so I let him go. First, we can explain the committee substitute difference if you have questions of the commissioner.
Yeah,
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Corbett, thank you very much for your testimony. You noted that the reason for the tax that was, for the increase in the amount that was going to be used there, because of the, until the resource development happens, at least I get the flavor that this is a temporary tax, and after the resources are developed, we start getting revenues from the resource development once they start actually producing money into the coffers. Is there any plan to reduce this tax back from 20% in the future?
At this juncture, through the chair, Senator Olson, at this juncture, there is no plans to reduce the tax that I'm aware of.
So it is a permanent tax?
Yes, it is.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like to point out we had an income tax, and when we had extra revenue, we did away with an income tax in the state. So things like that do happen occasionally. Hopefully, we'll be able to have enough revenue here in the future to run the state, and we can reduce this also.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator?
I know that, Commissioner, you're in a tight schedule to run off somewhere else, but I have to ask these two questions. First is that one of the reasons that we're told that the increase in tax is for the increased maintenance of highways and new highway development. Since we can't dedicate funds, how are you proposing to secure those $37 or $41 million, which is will have to go into the general fund, that the legislators don't look at that and say, well, we need it more for education or we need it more for another area? And then I have one more question.
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln. There is no straightforward answer to that question. The money will go into the general fund. The governor has stated his intent that it is to be used to help pay for the maintenance of the road system, and that's all I can say.
I just don't want the public to be deceived in thinking that because they are going to have this tax that it's going to go into a dedicated fund. The other question, Commissioner, and I appreciate your answer, the other question that I've got is with the CS before us, and I haven't had it explained to me yet, but it now includes motor fuel, removing the motor fuel tax exemption of the Alaska Railroad. What is the administration's position on that?
Through the chair, Senator Lincoln, at this juncture, the administration has not taken a position on that proposal.
Thank you.
There it is.
Commissioner, how much does the existing 8-cent fuel tax generate?
Through the chair, Senator Terrio. Robin Wilson, can you help me there?
Yes, it's Robin. I'm sorry, could you repeat the question, sir?
How much does the current motor fuel tax raise?
Through the chair, this is Robin Wilson, revenue auditor. I manage the motor fuel tax program, and the total revenue generated by the motor fuel tax is approximately $37 million at this time, but that includes also aviation fuel and marine fuel. I can get you the exact numbers shortly after this meeting. I don't have them right at hand. If you're interested in specifically the what's used on the highway.
Okay. And can you tell me, with the proposed increase, what will the total raised be?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Terrio, I believe that in for the fiscal year 04, it'll be about $37 million, which but for a full year, it will be $41 million, will be the amount of the increase.
So is the first answer correct, that we're presently, without any raise, $37 million is what we're raising? That was the question, as I understand it. And we're just raising, increasing $3-4 million. I don't know. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So, Commissioner, so the $41 million, once we get up to a full year, is just motor fuel on the road. And do you know what our total current M&O cost for highways is? What are we currently spending on maintaining the roads? If you don't know, we have somebody here.
Through the chair, Senator Terrio, no, I don't know that. I think we'll refer that to the Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll hold that question until DOT's turn.
On that same issue, because I'm not sure those figures are, it doesn't sound right to me. You were saying, Robin said they expect, or at the current, 8 cents. It's $37 million, and then increasing it another 12 cents would bring it to 41. That doesn't jive.
Senator, I think the 12 cents, the $41 million is just for the increase 12. So we have to take the two numbers and add it together.
Is that correct?
The fiscal note just reflects the proposed 12-cent increase.
No, but that still doesn't make sense to me, because if you go from 8 cents, which is 37. Then and increase it again to 1.5 times over that, then you've got to come to like 60.
It's because a portion of the $37 million is avgas and marine gas, which will not be increased with the 12 cents.
So let me ask the question this way then, so that we have apples to apples. If that $37 million is av fuel and marine fuel, and the highway, then how much is the 12 cent, or the 20 cents, the additional 12 cents going to raise?
That's the $41 million. The 37 is a mixture of avgas, marine, and road.
Mm-hmm. And I'm asking if you use that same road, av, marine. What's the figure for 20 cents?
The 12 cents is not going to raise the rate on avgas. It's not going to raise the rate on marine. They stay the same. They do not get increased. It's my understanding.
The increase on av
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we will get back with you with a detailed breakdown of the existing revenues received from all motor fuel taxes.
Okay.
Chair, may I interrupt for just a moment?
Please.
I did locate the numbers. I apologize for the delay. Of the $37 million, approximately $27 million is used on the highway. And then there's about $6 million on marine fuel tax, and another $4 or so on aviation. And so the numbers that Commissioner Corbis gave you would be the increase over and above that.
So, Mr. Chairman, thank you for tracking down that information. So, once we go up to 20 cents, if that's in fact what happens, the total revenue raised on a full year's worth of collections off of motor fuel on the highway is going to be the 41 plus 27. Is that correct?
41 plus 27, yes. That's my understanding through the chair, Senator Terrio.
Any other questions, Commissioner? Thank you. And if I could get staff up to explain the difference in the two bills, the committee substitute and the original bill.
For the record, I'm Richard Schmidt, staff with Senator John Cowdery. And the overall basic change between the original bill, which is, I believe the one in your packet would read backslash A, and the one that we have now is backslash Q, which is the CS that's been adopted. The difference overall is to include the Alaska Railroad in the contributing to allow the Alaska Railroad to contribute some funds into the fuel tax. We did some research and found out that, and you have a sheet in your packet, which is this sheet here, that shows how much diesel fuel and other locomotive fuel, et cetera, the railroad uses each year. The reason why they've not paid any tax for that, if I'm correct, is because they're a government agency. So there would be the same reason like the municipality doesn't pay tax. So the change basically, and there's a, specifically it does it in a couple of places on page, for the new, without getting into the whole thing, page 5, line 16 and 17 is the change that was made. Whereas on page 4, line 19 and 20. So what's done is that the railroad, the language in those two places takes the railroad out of the category of being an agency that doesn't pay fuels tax and puts them in an agency that does pay fuel tax, and also removes the exemption that would go for a number of purposes. In other words, under the bill, the new tax would be 20 cents a gallon with an 18 cents a gallon refund for certain situations which are listed, like if the vehicle's not used on the public highways, that kind of thing.
Kettlers, backhoes, and things.
Right. So this would change that to exempt the railroad from that 18 cent refund. So that's done through page 4, line 19 and 20. It just takes the railroad out of being a thing that's exempt. And then it kind of clarifies that or solidifies it on page 5 in section G so that it's covered on both ends. And the drafter did it that way, and exactly why they did it that way, I don't know exactly, but that's the way they said there was the way to do it.
I'd just like to add to that, if I could. The reason the railroad issue came up, the trucking industry feels they're in competition and that they don't pay fuel taxes. And just recently, Smyrna Brothers had a load of Linda come through Seward to Anchorage. And the railroad came in and underbid 200 loads that the trucking industry had, and underbid the trucking industry. And so It seems in a matter of fairness, if they're not paying fuel tax, the trucking industry certainly is, and they're in competition with it. That's why I introduced this bill. And I ran it through legal to see if we could do it, and they seem to say we can do it. So that would raise from the railroad another $1.2 million. That hopefully explains. And we have also online, we have in the room Wendy Lindstrom from the railroad, or do we want to go offline to Pat Gamble? So Pat, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Okay, just a minute. Senator Lincoln had a question.
Just for clarification, because this is a bill that's at the request of the governor. This is the governor's bill.
Yeah.
That's why I did ask the commissioner if the administration or if the governor is supporting it, and he said that the administration has not taken a position on it at this time. Are you working with the administration then to get them to...
I made them aware of what I was going to do.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pat, are you there? Please identify yourself and please support the bill.
Mr. Chairman, can you hear me okay?
Hello, Mr. Chairman. What was that to you?
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Pat Gamble, and I'm the President and CEO of the Alaska Rail Corporation.
Yes.
Speaking on behalf of substitute for Senate Bill 112, let me make a couple of remarks regarding what we think the railroad position in this matter would be as it applies to a diesel tax, specifically the diesel fuel tax. First of all, we believe that that this bill discriminates against the railroad in violation of the Federal Railroad Revitalization and Regulatory Reform Act of 1976, which is codified at 49 of the U.S. Code, Section 11501, for reference. And the reason we think that is because the bill would require the railroad to pay a substantially higher fuel tax per gallon, and that paid by barges and ships and aircraft. Congress adopted this statute that I referenced expressly for the purpose of protecting the financial stability of the railroad industry by shielding railroads from discriminatory taxation that put them at a competitive disadvantage to other modes of transportation, which is essentially the issue here. There have been several court case decisions from other jurisdictions that have held that states may not impose a fuel tax on railroads that is greater than that imposed on other modes of transportation. My second point, Mr. Chairman, is that we believe it's an inappropriate application in that the fuel tax is collected under AS 43.40.010. Go to the construction and maintenance of airports, highways, and port facilities, whereas the ARC, which is a state agency, we must not forget that, the ARC pays for all of its costs to construct and maintain its roadbed, and those costs are not supported by any other mode of transportation. Thus, the ARC would be at a direct competitive disadvantage because, unlike other industries in the transportation field, the ARC would have to pay the tax, which I assume would in fact some way go to roads, for example, but we would also have to pay to maintain our own tracks, and none of those other industries pay anything to the railroad to maintain our tracks.
Excuse me, Mr. Gamble, does the railroad cross roads?
Yes, they do. The roads have been built all over up and down the rail line long after the railroad was built, and yet they do cross our right-of-way.
Thank you.
Finally, my third comment would be, to our knowledge, as a state agency and one who is charged with making a profit, it seems unusual to be taxing a state agency by a state agency. We've looked across the remainder of the of the states, and to our knowledge, no other state imposes a fuel tax or a ticket tax on a state-owned railroad. By our count, there are 18 state-owned passenger railroads and probably at least two state-owned freight railroads, and none of them are taxed by their states. In terms of, Mr. Chairman of and members of the committee, in terms of a financial impact, it's important to note also that we receive a considerable amount of federal funds. Some of those funds are directly appropriated through the FRA, and others come to us in terms of formula funds from the FTA. Those FTA funds, we leverage those dollars considerably. And so for every dollar that the railroad puts up, we can pull in $9 of FTA money. So $1.2 million in tax, which would come right off our bottom line, would be $10 million that I would not be able to pull into the state from federal formula funds. And these are formula funds that are authorized for every passenger carrying railroad in the country that can afford the match. And our match is currently just a hair over 9%, right at 9%. And so at $1.2 million, that would be about $10 million that I would not be able to afford to bring into the state to put into projects, to put our people to work, and to better the line.
On that point, Mr. Gamble?
Sure.
You mean to say that your expenses of operation, the railroad, whatever them expenses, denies you some federal funds?
If I did not have the capital dollars to provide for match at the rate of 9%, I would be unable to pull in approximately $10 million a year based on the current amount of diesel tax that we're discussing here at this committee here.
And did you make a profit somewhere in the area of $8 or $10 million last year or this year, whenever your last statement?
We certainly did if you include the federal reimbursement figures. But if I include the operating ratio of just the trains themselves and whether the train movements pay, our forecast for 2003 in our budget is that we will make about $1.1 million off train operations, not off federal reimbursements, but off train operations. So a $1.2 million tax would actually put us slightly into the red in terms of operating ratios for 2003. That has two impacts. Number one, it's $10 million federal dollars left that I can provide matching funds for. I have about a $300 million capital improvement program, which you have before you in the document that I submitted in January, which is the annual report to the legislature, in which it's all documented.
Okay, I'm sorry to interrupt there. I'll let you finish, and then I'll have a few comments.
Yes, sir. The second point I'd like to make is that if our lenders, who do look at our train operating ratios, see us at the point where we're not making a profit on train operations, and this is aside from any federal reimbursements, we in fact have to explain ourselves to our lenders. We have debt covenants that have to be covered, and so the idea of making a profit is not just simply one that we're comfortable with because we'd like to make a profit, but we also incur debt, for example, when we bought the newer locomotives, and we have a responsibility to maintain certain operating ratios in order for our debt status to remain as it is presently. So for a multitude of reasons, Mr. Chairman, I think the railroad would certainly be in a position to have to question, number one, the legality from the federal standpoint, and probably that would have to be determined in court, I suppose. And then number two, it sends a mixed signal to the railroad in terms of what the state wants the railroad to do. Does it want the railroad to be profitable as it has been on its own, or does it want to tax off that profit as a disincentive? Because as you well know, the only things I do with profit, I either buy new equipment for our employees, I fix things like leaky roofs, or I'm able to afford a pay rate for our employees that allows me to recruit and retain good people for the state and put them to work and give them a good package and a good lifestyle. I think all those things are what we still want to continue doing, this would put us in kind of a squeeze.
Okay, Secretary.
Could you go back over the federal law that prevents any tax being levied on you? I mean, right now you pay no tax. If I understood you correctly, you can't tax any higher than any other mode of transportation?
The reference, Mr. Chairman, if I may, the reference that I gave is commonly called the 4R Act, which is 49 of the U.S. Code, Section 11501. It's part of the Regulatory Revitalization and Regulatory Reform Act, Railroad Revitalization and Regulatory Reform Act of 1976.
Okay, and what, how does it read?
It essentially says that it would discriminate against the railroad because this bill would require the ARC to pay a substantially higher fuel tax at 20% or 20 cents a gallon than that paid by barges and ships and aircraft. Congress adopted this statute for the express purpose of protecting the financial stability of railroads by shielding them from discriminatory taxation of this type that puts them at competitive disadvantage from other transportation modes.
Okay, the railroad doesn't currently pay any tax. Barges and ships and aircraft do. So under that federal law, could you at least be taxed up to the level of barges, ships, and aircraft?
That's what the law says, as I understand it, yes. My understanding is that would be 5 cents a gallon for barges and ships and approximately 3 cents a gallon for aircraft currently.
Okay. And can you give us an idea, if you were to be taxed, how you would handle that in your rate setting methodology? How would that be passed on, or how would you absorb that?
Well, that's a good question, and we have not really sat down and figured out how we would do that. As you well know, the last time we tried to set rates, for example, on one of our passenger services, it drew quite a response out of the Talkeetna area. That's a money-losing proposition, which would lose even more money now under this current tax. Some of our break-even propositions, and there are a number of those, probably would not be profitable. They would just simply add burden onto the railroad and take up line space. We would have to do an analysis of all these, including the export coal, which, as you know, we're in negotiations right now to try and bring that back on. And the railroad position in that has been to assume a rate that is virtually a break-even rate for the railroad in order to get coal back moving out of Alaska. We would have to reevaluate segments of our business that are marginal to determine how we would be able to pass this on, if we would be able to at all.
Okay. So do you have... So you have not run any numbers on, say, how much you would have to increase the shipment of a container from Anchorage to Fairbanks, or you haven't done any calculations of what that would do to the coal?
No, we have not yet at this time. We are, in fact, just beginning to do that as we saw more detail on the bill itself, and we've just gotten that recently, and so we're just beginning that analysis.
Okay, thank you.
In response, we didn't go into this without some legal advice, and first of all, the railroad is a public corporation of the state of Alaska. It's a creature of state law and not federal of the state, and is also subject to the laws of the state. And under the Constitution of the state of Alaska, the real and personal property of the state and its political subdivisions is exempt from taxation except as provided by law. And under this provision of the Constitution, the legislature has the authority to determine whether and to the extent to which property of the state, such as the Alaska Railroad, would be subject to taxation. And the Federal Alaska Railroad Transfer Act does not appear to place any constraint on the ability of the state to impose taxes on the Alaska Railroad Corporation. There is one provision in the Transfer Act, that is worthy of note, but that provision does not limit the power of the state to impose a tax. Under the terms of the Transfer Act, the revenues generated by the state-owned railroad shall be retained and managed by the state-owned railroad for railroad and related purposes. And according to Senator Stevens, this provision is intended to avoid the need for annual appropriation for the railroad by the state. And this is just part of a legal opinion that I had asked for, and do we have that right? And I believe the state has that right. You're a state, you're not a federal entity now, you're a state entity, so. And you're in competition with other private people who have to pay taxes. So competition, if you say you don't have the rates, the ability to pay extra, you're going to have to raise your rates. That's a simple way. That's how the private sector has to do things. So anyway, that's just some of my comments. If you'd like to comment on any of that, I'd be glad to hear you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only thing I would say is that I think you made the point very well that I tried to make earlier, and that is I think we have a legal issue here. My legal advisors tell me that the state can't preempt federal code, and so the outcome of the debate, of which you stated the state side very well, I think is going to be determined in court, and it would be the railroad's responsibility, of course, to carry that forward to get that determination, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I'm sure that that would probably be true, but I just anyway, Senator Wagner.
I just wanted maybe this isn't the time to have this discussion, but you said something that kind of clicked in my mind. I'd like you to restate it just so I hope I didn't hear what I heard you say. You talked about negotiating a coal contract that's basically going to give you a break-even rate on hauling the coal if the contract with Korea or whoever comes around. Is that true?
For the actual movement of the coal itself, that's without going into a lot of detail because we're still negotiating that contract, but essentially I was using that as an example of a case whereby we would take on an element of business and we would do it where the operating margin was very, very narrow. It would cash flow, but it would be very, very narrow, such that if then we had to include something like this tax, it could make the difference between either cash flowing or coming in at around 1-to-1 or actually going negative. And so we would have to look at segment analysis across the entire railroad to look, with the addition of this tax, at what those segment analyses would look like on a case-by-case basis for both passengers and freight. And I was using that one as an example where the operating ratio is pretty close to 1-to-1. I wasn't trying to say anything specific about that contract, but just give you an idea of what I was talking about with regard to operating segments that sometimes are very, very close to a 1-to-1 operating ratio.
Well, that's a pretty major contract to be that close of a ratio, because basically that puts the state into subsidizing the transportation for the coal for nothing, so a person in private business can make a profit. I kind of have problems with that.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell. We have a sheet here that breaks down what the proposed tax would be on the locomotive diesel, and it talks about 75,000 gallons of diesel for on-road vehicles, 150,000 gallons of gasoline for on-road vehicles. The same for 4R Act, does it speak to the taxation of fuels that the railroad uses in vehicles that in fact do drive on the road network?
Yes, we did speak, Mr. Chairman, if I may. We did speak to the fact that we have about 180 vehicles ranging from small pickup trucks up to, large semi-type trucks. And we've given an estimate of the approximate fuel purchase of gasoline that we use for those kinds of vehicles and what the tax on that would be for.
So can you tell me the same federal provision that you indicate limits the state's ability to tax on the fuel that the engines use, does it apply also to fuel that you'd be putting into a truck that's used to expedite parts around?
Mr. Chairman, no, it does not. In fact, over the range of our 180 or so vehicles, we use probably 225,000 gallons of gas and diesel a year. We estimate about a $45,000 tax increase is what we're talking about here. That Federal Railroad statute that I mentioned before does not cover these vehicles. It's also interesting to note that we have never really gone forward and tried to recover the taxes that we do pay for fuel at the gas pump either. We buy that fuel, but we don't ever try to recover those taxes.
Okay, so that possible $45,000, you're currently paying that, you think?
Right.
I have one more question dealing with rates. Do you have published rates that you use on most commodities that you transport? Or do you negotiate individually each time you haul an item?
We negotiate individually. Unless we see a we actually do both. We'll negotiate individually for small contracts and then larger contracts, for example, with the cruise ship companies, we might sign a contract that would last anywhere from one summer to a couple of years.
Yeah, that's for personnel, right?
Yeah. That would be for passengers. Yeah. For freight, we will likewise attempt to sign longer-term contracts, but many of them are very short. And based on the nature of some of the business that we do, like the Spinard Lumber that the chairman mentioned, that's a one-time opportunity that popped up, and so that would be an example of a short-term contract.
Just for the benefit of...
Let me follow that up. So am I correct in assuming then that you do have a published rate for building materials, but when it's to your advantage, like with Spinard, with a larger amount of lumber materials, you negotiate an individual contract?
Well, by published rate, I'm not exactly sure what you mean.
All truckers that transport freight have published rates that I know of, that I've ever done business with.
And you?
FCC, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, yeah. I would have to get you an answer for the record on that one, because I'd have to go check all of our rates to see... to make sure that if I gave you an answer, it covered all of our rates. I'm a little reluctant to try to do that right now. I do know we negotiate individual rates to a large degree, but I can't say that there aren't published rates. I'm just not that familiar with them.
Thank you. Just for the benefit of Senator Wagner, we in the past, there's been attempts to put the railroad under the Executive Budget Act, which we would be able to look inside that. We've come as close, I think, as one vote of getting that done. But we can't look in as it right now, the way it says, we can't look at the books and things and salaries and a whole bunch of things. And I don't know if Pat, can we look at the rates too, or is that proprietary or what?
As I understand it, Mr. Chairman, legislative audit can come in and look at the books, and they can determine everything, but and they can reveal everything but proprietary information, and of course that's their interpretation. That's as I understand the audit process.
Mm-hmm. So would you be in favor of the Executive Budget Act?
No, sir. Not under the current rules and directions that have been given to the railroad for its operations.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Anyway, we have, like I said, we didn't get into this, Mr. Gamble. You know that. I talked to you a little bit about this, but I got a legal opinion, and I understand that what you said earlier about a lawsuit, that would probably be determined from the third floor.
or would you determine whether there's a lawsuit or not?
Mr. Chairman, of course, you know, our boss does go up to the third floor, and I'm speaking to you today without any direction either from my board or from any indication from the third floor.
Yes.
Trying to answer your questions directly without the benefit of any knowledge of what the politics might be at this point. So I think I'd have to reserve the answer to the point where I got guidance either from my board or where we got guidance from the third floor on this particular issue.
Senator Wagner.
Sir, can you tell me one other, well, you might not have this, maybe you have somebody there that can get the information to us. What's the cost, the railroad, in gallonage of fuel to run a train between, round trip between Anchorage and Seward and back? From Anchorage to Seward with no load and with the haul back from Seward with fully loaded. I know that stretches out because it has to do with the amount of weight you're pulling and everything, but on the average, what does it cost to run an engine that way? In gallons.
I would have to get you that answer for the record. It's interesting that we were having that conversation when the committee hearing started because we eventually reached the same conclusion that in order to have a walking around number, it would be nice to train run and determine for freight and for passenger what that might be. And I can get you that information, would be happy to for the record, but I don't have it at my fingertips. If I took a guess, I'd probably be exactly wrong.
Yeah, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you. Other than the potential of having to raise the rates, do you see if such a tax went through, what effects would it have on the possible extension of the rail line down through Canada? Do you think that this potentially makes the rail rates such that they would not be able to compete with barge traffic?
No, I don't. I think it would be a stretch to try to claim something like that. The impact on the railroad, I mean, is really quite straightforward. It just simply comes off the bottom line. It is an expense that goes to a bottom line that is the function of a train operating ratio that's very close to 1-to-1. And as I said before, you know, our goal and our board's charge and the state's charge to the railroad, for that matter, is to be profitable as any private corporation would be. And it equipped us with certain tools in order to try to assist that profitability. And those tools have been in place, including this particular one we're discussing, since the first days of the railroad. This is a C-state change in terms of the attitude toward, I think, what the railroad was designed to be for the state. And in terms of what the railroad gives back to the state, a profitable railroad has been of great benefit to the state in many, many ways than just the $1 million that could come from this addition to tax.
Get the bill here.
I think, again, it's quite important to understand that the leverage on each dollar that we put into a capital program, into the track of the railroad, or the upgrade of a depot, is to the benefit of the state of Alaska. And if I get $10 million less as a result of being taxed to that degree, that's $10 million in terms of labor that won't be done on our track, contracts, supplies, and so on and so forth. I mean, there's an economic effect here. And that's $10 million a year, just assuming this rate that we're discussing. I know you're trying to get $40 million, for example, additional. From the testimony that I heard before, well, you're going to get $10 million less from the railroad that's going into the state now. So I think there's an offset there that needs to be valued and discussed from a bigger picture point of view.
Yeah, I'd just like to respond to that, and then Senator Lincoln has a question. Anyway, you talk about a benefit to Alaska. Do you think the trucking industry, if they make a profit and pay taxes and pay fuel taxes, is a benefit to the state of Alaska?
Certainly, Mr. Chairman. And as a matter of fact, we probably get along with the trucking industry right now as well as any time in history of the railroad. And one of the reasons we do that is because the truckers, they haul what railroads can't, and the railroads haul what truckers can. And very little overlap exists. You mentioned
the case of Spinard, that's an example where there was some overlap. But in the general movement of goods and services up and down the rail belt and the highways, the two of us occupy very different niches here in Alaska, and we do it very successfully.
You know, you mentioned earlier that the, you know, you have no way. Well, you know, this fuel tax itself with the trucking industry, many of the trucks have contracts with the maritime people for delivering the cargo or the vans, and they have no way of recovering this extra cost to them either, except maybe a more efficient operation until at least sometime they can renew the contracts. So it's all taken into consideration. So. Senator Lincoln.
I was hoping you were going to give me a few more minutes here to look this up, but I'll go ahead. And I'm stumbling around in the dark here, Mr. Gamble, because I'm tugged one way and then I'm tugged another, and I'm trying to sort this all out. First of all, and going back to the on-road vehicles, I guess I don't have any great heartburn in not exempting the railroad for use of the highways for your on-road vehicles, but that's a mere $45,000, and as was noted, have not sought reimbursement for those gas taxes, and in fact, I think what I've got here in front of me is that you're working to eliminate fuel tanks in areas where there are retail fuel outlets so that you could use the private retail fuel outlets. So to me, that sort of is answered on the paying your way for the taxes on the on-road vehicle use, and that's very minimal to the calculations that has been submitted to us. Now, what I'm wrestling with here, and I've tried to look at all your information to see, the Alaska Railroad Corporation is not an agency. It's not a state agency. You're an entity, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes, Senator, that's correct, or an instrumentality of the state is probably a more accurate way to put it.
All right. Then I was trying to look on, and I don't know if you have this draft of the CS, but on page 5, if you do, page 5, line 16, it says, for the purposes of this subparagraph, the Alaska Railroad is not a federal, state, or local government agency. And I was trying to look that up under that 4240 to find out how you're described there. But I guess if we have to, it says fuel sold to federal, state, and local government agencies. If you're not an agency, then I guess I'm bewildered as why we have to say you're not an agency. Because if AS 4240 already says that, I'm not sure why we have to point that out. But I'm that 1.1 million. I'm a bit perplexed on there because. You are, as you pointed out in your special report to the legislature, January 2003, on line 4, you say that the Alaska Railroad is mandated to be a self-sustaining corporation required to conduct its business without operating subsidies from the state. And I'm not sure if this can be considered a subsidy, but I wouldn't have so much heartburn if it were not for other pieces of legislation that has passed this very transportation committee, where we're expanding the railroad down to Canada and expanding elsewhere and giving you all a 500-foot right-of-way. The 500-foot right-of-way, which, you know, as you heard me being opposed to. But, you know, all of these things, I almost feel like on one hand we're pushing you to do these things, and then on the other hand we're saying, but now we're going to take back at least $1.1 million of your operating budget. So I don't know if you can help me through that dilemma, but and give it a stab.
I'd just like to interrupt before you go. We got a senator here has to leave right away, and we got a transportation official here I'd like to hear from if he has some comments. We got some questions, and then maybe we, if you would think about that, Pat, and we'll ask the DOT to come up, and we had a question. So,
pleasure, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is George Lavasser, and I'm with the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, currently serving as the acting state maintenance engineer. There were a couple of questions asked earlier that I could respond to quickly. One of them is, how much do we spend on an annual basis for maintenance of our highway system? It's about $57 million that we spend on maintenance that comes out of the general fund. And also we spend another $50 million a year out of the general fund, which goes to match the federal appropriation to us for our roads. So basically we're spending about $107 million out of the general fund for our highway system.
Senator Terrio had a question.
So, George, thank you. So, $107 million a year, and we're currently raising $27 million. So, you don't need a dedicated fund to steer every single one of these dollars into road maintenance or match, or state match for road construction. We're already spending that money. Right.
Chair, Senator, yes. Plus the fact that there's a huge backlog of deferred maintenance projects on the highway system that we have not addressed. Right now we're taking in $27 million, and then the additional $41 million with the 12-cent raise would put us at about $68 million, 69, right in that area. But our outlay is much greater than that.
Thank you. You want to continue? You had something else?
Just a couple more things. I wanted to stress the deferred maintenance backlog, and I've been in the field for almost 30 years working on these items, and that we're getting further behind each year. And the other thing is that the increase in the fuel tax is not intended to affect the rural areas for snow machine use, motorboat, or ATVs. And I know that would be a significant burden in some of the rural communities that are not connected to the road system.
I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Can you repeat what you just said? Just more clear, maybe.
The increase going to 20 cents a gallon is not intended to affect snow machine fuel, motorboat fuel, and ATV use in the rural areas. And I know that previous conversations with the Department of Revenue, and Landa, maybe you can correct me too or add to it, is that Revenue was going to try to put into a mechanism by which the rural areas that aren't connected to the road system wouldn't have to, would have an easy way of not having to pay that money or getting it back.
Mr. Chairman, do they currently pay the 8 cents?
Through the chair, yes, they do in most areas. But there is a way to get it back as a form that you can fill out to retrieve the money that you spend on it.
And Mr. Chairman, what's that based on? Is it based on an affidavit that the vehicle is used in off-road, or if you use it on a state-built and state-maintained road network, but it's non-connected, you can get a rebate?
To the chair, maybe Robin, you could answer that question for us from Revenue?
Yes, I'm here. Through the chair, perhaps it would be helpful if I just gave a little explanation of how the refund structure works. First, there's sort of two different types of refunds. One would be a situation in which the use was fully exempt. For example, if a person bought fuel that was going to be used for heating, then there's two refund mechanisms for that situation. One is that the dealer that sells the fuel, say the gas station, can choose to not charge the person the tax, and then the gas station can get a refund itself by filing a claim for refund. or the other alternative is the gas station may charge the tax and that the user then can apply for a refund. It works either way, and there's no requirement that it be done one way or the other. That is not true with respect to off-road refunds, where the entire tax is not being refunded at this time, but 6 out of 8 cents is being refunded. And the way that works is that the dealer has to collect the 8 cents, and the user then applies for a refund to get the 6 cents back. I think the difference in those two situations, perhaps historically, it was recognized that there's a fair amount of risk on the off-road refund for contractors and you know, mining businesses and so on. And the refund is claimed at this time by filing within a year of the purchase of the fuel. The user sends in their invoice showing that they paid the tax. There's a pretty simple form that goes along with that, and then the refund is issued. And the person can file every month if that's convenient, or you know, every 3 months, or once a year, as long as they don't miss the one-year window. Does that clarify it a bit?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead. Complete your testimony, and then we'll get back to. It's my intention we're going to hold this bill today, but I'd like to get everything on the record, and we'll deal with.
Can I ask one point of clarification along the same lines?
Yes.
Now, where
Senator Wagner?
Where in this state are we reimbursing people for off-road usage? The 6 cents. Is that statewide off-road? Like, if I take my four-wheeler down to the beach and ride it for 2 days, the fuel I use with my four-wheeler, is that reimbursable at 6 cents a gallon to me?
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, yes, that is correct. It's statewide for those kinds of vehicles. It also applies to any sort of vehicle that's used on a highway where it's not required to be licensed. And so what that means is in a remote area, the state may not require vehicles to be licensed to drive on those particular local roads. So therefore, a pickup being driven on that local road would not have to pay the tax. And we do not have a list of roads that are not public roads. We generally look at on the internet. There's a website that has pictures of these villages and local areas, and usually it's fairly apparent whether it's connected to quote public ways or whether it's just for local use. If we have a question, then we contact either the taxpayer or the locality to clarify that. So it applies not just to a four-wheeler, but in certain circumstances, it would apply also to pickups or cars.
I'm not trying to be argumentative. I'm just trying to figure out why we do that for 6 cents a gallon. And I'm wondering if it doesn't cost the state and the private enterprise people that are involved in this more than is reimbursed to the people that take advantage of this process.
Through the chair, sir, I can't really speak to the thinking historically on that one. I know that probably the biggest off-road claimants are your construction companies, mining companies, and so on, that use a lot of what we consider to be off-road equipment.
Okay, I understand that. I was just talking specifically to the RVs, the four-wheelers and the snow machines.
As to the reason that was set up that way, I really couldn't address that.
Oh, yes.
Senator, are you?
Senator
Olson.
Yeah, good afternoon. I was wondering, as you look at the amount of that is collected that's and the people that are eligible for this reimbursement, how much every year is not returned to the people that are eligible for reimbursement?
Well, Through the chair, we don't have a measure of, we don't really have any way of measuring the refunds that are not claimed because, you know, the dealers report taxable sales of fuel, but they don't report where specifically the fuel was sold.
If I could understand the situation, if you're holding 100,000 gallons out in Hooper Bay and you sell that after a year, you should be able to get back $6,000. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. You have more testimony?
Yes, sir. Just one more item. The 8 cent that a gallon.
Identify yourself again for the.
For the record, this is George Lavasser again. The 8 cent that we're paying right now was instituted in 1961. And if we adjusted the rate for the CPI since 1961, we'd be at about 48 cents. At 8 cents, we are basically the lowest in the nation. And I just want to say that our department and the administration strongly supports passage of this bill.
I'd just like to say, too, I was just outside just recently, and I seen on the gas pump $2.12, $2.19 fuel in other states. So. And, of course, I think a little bit of that is due to the price of oil. But when the oil goes down, I'm sure it'll go down in the at the pumps too, but of course the tax is constant, no matter what the original cost of the product is. Okay, does that conclude your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Is there any questions?
Just one quick point I'd like to make. We're number two because George is 7.5 cents right now. Yeah. But we're close to the lowest.
Through the chair, Senator Wagner, they do have a sales tax though.
Seven and a half cents. Oh, right. So, I understand. But they are, we're talking about gas tax and they are the.
They do put a sales tax on top of the gas tax, making us the lowest. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Like I said, it's my intention to hold this bill, and I have got to leave very shortly, but I've got an important appointment in just a few minutes. But if Pat, do you have any more testimony?
Asked him a question that he wasn't answering.
Okay. Senator Lincoln has some questions for you, Patrick.
Actually, I already asked it, and that's when you asked for that him to hold that answer until now.
Then, now that you've held the answer,
enlighten me.
Enlighten Senator Lincoln.
Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if I could continue to hold the answer.
Can't enlighten me?
I forgot the question.
There are a number of them.
I'd be happy to make a comment to Senator Lincoln. I think you sort of touched a nerve, and I believe you got right to the heart of an issue that we're debating here at the railroad as well during these times when there are a number of initiatives, this being one of them, to change the original formulas that set up the Alaska Railroad during the transfer. That set that original formula up, and of course that was set up by the legislature, and the legislature, due to the change in conditions, can certainly alter that original formula, which some of the things we're discussing now would seem to be doing. And it's certainly not my position to try to defend to the death something that the legislature thinks is for the betterment of the state and would want to have the railroad evolve as conditions warrant and as we move into the future. My job is to take the guidance that is in the statute and make sure that we uphold that guidance, and that's what I'm doing at the present time. But we get caught between a rock and a hard place, as you pointed out, when some of the developmental and more risky undertaking that the railroad might participate in as we develop the future of the state clash head-on with the requirement for the railroad to maintain a healthy bottom line and the appropriate ratios that go with it as a business. And then if we are to do that, we in turn are dependent upon those elements of the original formula, such as not being taxed, such as being indemnified, such as being able to use our land for revenue, and those kinds of things that were originally set up, you know, those are the reasons why the railroad has been successful. It's been my position, and I've testified before this committee as well as others in the past, where I've said it should
should we undertake to want to change those elements of the railroad's success as a business, we would want to make sure we run the unintended consequences and look at those very carefully, because the success that we've had up to this point in time means that the formula that was originally written was a pretty good one. And so we have the incentive of a business to want to make a bottom line, for example. And yet then when we do, if we're penalized for our success by taking that bottom line away and giving it to the general fund where we don't know where it goes or what it does, as opposed to today where we take our success and turn it right back into the railroad, then I would caution, you know, that we're playing with a formula that's worked very well, and maybe the alternative here isn't as good as what our track record would suggest the original one was. Transportation organization, we know, for example, that the weight of a freight train going over the line directly relates to the maintenance that goes into that line. Turn around, and with the profits that we make, we put those profits right back into that line, and nobody else helps us with that. We do it ourselves. Hire the people, do the analysis, maintenance, to make sure that that line can continue to move the freight, to move the passengers, and to produce for the good of the state. And we would hope that as we go on to Canada or to the north, you know, that formula would obtain the same way it has for the last 17 years. And so in our current position as sort of the guardian of that transfer language and how it's administered, people are reporting to you, and my best technical advice and business advice is that that's a pretty good formula, and that when we start messing with it, we're going to pull a thread on this fabric that's going to start to unravel. And I guarantee you that once the thread gets pulled, it's just simply human nature, back to the well and try it again and try it again in the future. As I would just simply counsel it would be a shame to see the railroad ultimately become more and more a ward of the state, when in fact, I think for the most part, you don't have to worry about us right now in terms of our health and welfare. Most of the issues are individual issues and one-time issues that pop up. That's to be expected. Overall, you've got a pretty good organization here, and I think it's a good one because the legislature in Juneau put it together as a good one. I would just hope that we don't want to undo it and try to substitute something else that later on would be sorry for. And
Senator Wagner has a question.
Mr. Gamble, I got two questions. First, when you send the information to us on the gallons it takes for, let's just say, the average round trip between Anchorage and Seward a year, and how about including the number of people riding the railroad yearly and the costs for those various trips, like between Anchorage and Fairbanks and Anchorage and Seward? Can you do that too?
Yes, Senator, I'd be happy to.
And the other question is a two-part question. You know, we've been talking about 12 cents or 8 cents a gallon or whatever in fuel increases. How much increase in fuel have you had the last year, and how do you pass this cost on to your customer? Do you have a, you know, when I used to deal with trucking companies, I used to haul thousands and thousands of pounds a year in I had a home improvement center, and I hauled carpet and ceramic tile, you know, so they're all various weights. But if they had fuel cost increases, they had an automatic, even with their rates, their fixed rates, they automatically had a surcharge in fuel that was passed on to me on each billing. Do you do the same thing when you have fuel increase costs?
Senator, actually, the answer to your question is partially yes, we do. For example, in our maritime traffic coming up from Seattle on the barge, we can apply a surcharge, and we do. But we don't and cannot apply a surcharge to our passenger operations where we have contracts with the cruise companies, for example. And we don't apply a surcharge when it comes to moving petroleum products down from the refinery, moving the Williams trains to Anchorage. Our rates are set such that we cannot apply a surcharge in that case.
So you're eating the cost of increased fuel to Harold Williams' fuel down here?
I would not say we're eating the cost, because we have a very complicated contract with Williams regarding fuel and fuel price increases or decreases. It's a two-way. It works for them and it works for us. It's a hedge. We buy futures with Williams for fuel as well. We work that entirely different, for example, than we would work barge traffic coming up out of Seattle, where we just simply apply a surcharge. In our passenger traffic, we do not pass those costs on. We don't apply surcharges for passenger traffic.
Okay.
Okay, well, it just, you know, the question was, you stated earlier, and I'm going to, I got to leave after this comment, but you stated earlier that there was no way that, you know, if we increased this 18 cents or 20 cents a gallon, whatever it is, you could recover it, but it hasn't. Fuel prices went up at least that amount in the last year, and you absorbed that somehow, and probably will go back down, we hope. So that was the question that I think I'd like to have an answer for.
Well, again, Mr. Chairman, you're exactly right. We did absorb some of that, just like we absorb other business expenses in a business cycle. And fuel is one that does certainly cycle and has recently. In a couple of cases, the cost of fuel has gone up and gone back down again so fast that we couldn't even apply a surcharge. But to the degree we can put a surcharge on to a portion of our railroad business, and the ocean-going freight is just that, it's a small percentage of our overall freight. To the degree that we can apply a surcharge, we will. But there are other areas that, of course, we can't, and we do, in some cases, eat those costs.
But the trucking industry right now are faced with the same thing that you're talking about. They have contracts for delivering vans and things like this, and modules and things that, if this tax is implemented, they can't, until the contract comes to renew, recover that. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and to the degree that all this money is pooled and some of it comes back to the railroad to help us maintain the rail line, I think we could sit down and take a look at that if that's what the intention is. We wear down the rail line with trains, and we pay for it. And that is how that loop and that cycle works. Now, if this general fund we're talking about that would accrue as a result of these taxes would help us with that task, then I've sort of misunderstood where this money is going to go. But if that's not the case, then we eat that cost ourselves with no help from the outside as well. And of course, that is a state cost. It's our bottom line going back into the state-owned railroad.
Well, the trucking industry, you made a profit last year. Some of the trucking industry didn't, but they still have to face this increased fee, and that's why. Anyway, I've got to close this thing down, and we're going to hold this over for another hearing. And unless you have anything else to add, I'm going to adjourn.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for the opportunity to testify. And I would say, yes, we did make a profit last year. However, if we'd subtracted real estate, which is one of those elements that I was talking about earlier that's so important to the overall railroad,
yeah,
the train operations, as you would have noticed, would have been very, very marginal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We're adjourned.